Our next presentation will be by Bill Bennett, who joined Enco Systems. As you notice, our little closed captioning has been very, very great and accurate. But Bill joined Enco back in early 2019 after being a sales engineering position with the German manufacturer Lawo. Previous to that, he was a longtime remote broadcasting engineer, consultant, and a project manager overseeing venue, technical setup, and operations for five Olympics and countless U.S. broadcasts spanning the NBA, the NHL, NFL, and more. He exercised the right brain as an executive producer and a new media business development executive at QVC. And owned a laser display production company where he got to play with some really big lasers. So, put your hands together for Bill Bennett and closed captioning.
Hi, everybody. Okay, they told me this doesn't hurt at all. So, there's like these two 10,000 volt things here I can touch. anyway, yeah, hi. So it's nice to be back up here. I was here a couple years ago actually for another company talking about virtualization and radio, and now it's virtualization and captioning, I suppose, in a way. Yeah, and so let's see. There is the, is it the forward button? Okay, that's the, oh, the red button. Oh, awesome. Okay, cool. Why are we here? I always like to ask this one. Firstly, I'll kind of overview the technology, what captioning is, kind of different types of captioning there is in the past and in the future going forward. We'll talk a little bit about some of the other benefits that captioning brings as far as transcription and search benefits, stuff like that. Kind of broaden your understanding, maybe feed your curiosity a bit, what can happen when you start captioning more of your content beyond the stuff that you have to caption. Discuss some of those options with you interactively, of course, and by all means, you know, feel free to interrupt, I think, if that's okay with the question, even during the presentation, that's great. We'll talk about search and monetization, archival aspects of content, all because of captioning. So, real quick, just so you give a little bit of my background, right? I'm with Enco Systems. Before that, we used to be with Lawo. Both known to be innovators in their fields. Enco's had a product in the automated captioning space since about 2006. So I guess I have a bit of a bias towards automated captioning. And I hope there aren't any human captioners here, because if so, I must run out fast after. But we're not trying to put people out of jobs. There frankly aren't enough people to caption content anymore based on the regulations that are coming down. There's just not enough people that can do it. That's kind of where our background, oops, okay. Is there a backwards button? Oh, yeah, awesome, cool. Okay, there we go. So I'll get this figured out by the end. Captions are basically part of a broader set of accessibility products and services out there. There's a lot of folks that have some challenges either maybe with hearing or with seeing, and certainly with other languages. If you've just moved to this country and you don't speak English, you might have a little bit of trouble at first getting used to English. In all these cases, captions on a screen are very helpful. If you're not able to pick it up naturally by audio like we do now. So it's kind of a broader thing there, and we'll touch in the history in just a minute about that. So why do you want to caption? There's a few reasons. I mean, one, yes, it's regulatory. You certainly know about that, and what you don't know about can hurt you, so pay attention to the regulations, federal, state, and local. The folks in the Capitol are always inventing new ways to keep us busy. Also, there are a lot of lawsuits that have been flying because of lack of captioning, content that's not accessible to people. There's more of that. Searching of your content is very, very useful, not just your searching of your content, but the public searching through video search portals, and we'll touch on that. Nice to have transcripts, electronic copies of everything that's being transcribed in a paper or virtual paper document. You get that with transcriptions from captioning. Sometimes you're in a restaurant or some venue and it's just too darn loud and you can't hear what's being said on the television. Well, captioning on the screen, how often have we been able to enjoy what's on the TV, not being able to hear it, at least see what's being said? And the other thing is kind of being nice. I mean, making your content more accessible to more people is a good thing to do. You can't necessarily attach a dollar sign to that, but you might in some softer ways. And I hope again that we'll be able to get to that in 41 minutes. So one organization that is particularly strong in growing the importance and awareness and enforcement of captioning in the United States is the National Association for the Deaf. They have a statistic that approximately 48 million, nearly one in five, Americans are deaf of hard of hearing. And I think separate from that, there's a whole another 13.5 million Americans that watch British drama. So, right? I'm one of them, you know. It's not about turning the TV up, it's about hearing it at all. So keep that in mind. Makes me wonder if the movie that was going to be coming out, if that's going to be captioned. A little bit of history about where captions came from first, because it's always nice to know the root of things and how they evolve. It's actually really fascinating. They began in courts, right? And now we're talking about courts and on the other side of it, but to create a paper, actual physical paper copy of a transcription of a proceeding using generally what is known as a stenographer, a person that operates a keyboard, unlike keyboards that we're used to seeing, not a QWERTY keyboard, something with fewer keys. It's pretty neat, and actually there are a bunch of different versions. If you go out and Google the history of stenography, there's some real entrepreneurs there. And here's a couple of them, kind of an example of how fun it might be pressing keys all day. I think it'd be more fun captioning in a courtroom than it would be in modern television captioning, where you're captioning out of your own living room or something. So I think it was more fun back in the courtroom, especially if Perry Mason's in there. And then go back. And then there's nothing. Ah, there we go. All right. So there's one inventor particularly, I'd like to say, Ward Stone Ireland is his name. And as a teenager, he went to college by day and at night, researched shorthand. And ultimately came up with a keyboard system. Back in that day, it actually used multi-touch. Now, not the way we're used to using on our phones, but you could hold two keys down to get a different result than either of the keys individually. So that's kind of neat. But then that's evolved now, and they're modern. They're quite modern, you know, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, SD cards built in, USB ports. What's kind of interesting is, if you notice here, this is a piece of paper out of the output of a transcription thing, and the top line is the name of it says Dan, and the bottom line, Dan did Ann. I don't know, doesn't sound like good grammar, but it's pretty cryptic stuff. So it's really quite a unique kind of business. It takes some time. I've never myself tried to figure it out, but looks intriguing. Here's a quick set of examples of what different levels of captions look like. Historically, it started with open captions, where literally you put on a chyron, a surround, and some text on that. And as you edit a video, you pause, you type what they say, you put that up there, and you leave it up there for a few seconds. And that's permanently burned into the video. That's called open caption. Now, both humans and automation allow you to do this in a dynamic way, but that's permanently there on that video with an open caption. So that can be useful in some ways you don't want it. The French Chef was the first program ever captioned. That is not a frame grab of that. That was 1972, and it was on PBS. And we all know NPR and PBS are both real innovators in their field. And this is definitely where things started with captioning. And then closed captioning was the next step, and how to embed that into data in the video stream that is not competing with the video signal, the image of the video signal. Gallaudet University, which was at that time Gallaudet College in Washington, D.C., a school for those who are hard of hearing and for the deaf, they collaborated with, I'm looking at the font here, ABC, the program was called the Mod Squad, and it was broadcast over WETA. And then the FCC ultimately started to mandate the requirement of televisions being able to decode the embedded captions. So, and that's in the mid-70s that started to happen there. Notice it can be decoded by televisions or set-top boxes. It's analog back then, right? NTSC, never twice the same color. They got more interesting once digital TV started to come into fruition. Certainly still embedded, but now with DTV, there's a whole lot more room for a whole lot more data, including a whole lot more different types of fonts, color combinations. This is me just playing with different color combinations deliberately. That's not how the publisher created it, but it's kind of nice. I mean, it allows the publisher to create content that looks maybe better on their video signal than it would be just white text on black letters. The other thing is it also can be read by set-top boxes, over-the-top streaming devices and televisions, or web browsers too, if the streaming CDN, like a YouTube, if they're encoding the captions into their stream. And that's something, I don't want to digress too far into that, but if you do start playing with captioning of webcasts over the internet with embedded captions, you've got to check several things along the way. A lot of hardware encoders still to this day do not look at caption data within it, like an SDI stream or something. They ignore it. And even if they do create it and encode it into the MPEG stream, the CDN that you're streaming to may not be able to read those captions. And if they do read those captions, do they do anything with it? Do they allow it to be embedded within the browser viewer window? You got to check on all of those pieces. So it's one of those times in technology, once again, where it's evolving, and so the pieces are not always lining up. So something to check for. And this is what happens when you start playing with your own caption fonts on your own, which is what I was messing around with. The cool thing is DTV and the what's called CEA 608, I'm sorry, 708, that allows you to have a much more rich captioning environment that actually can augment and improve the look on your programming, not be ugly like this is. That was just for an example. In the analog days, it was called line 21, the vertical blanking line 21 that was what was being used. That was EIA 608, CEA 608, two different associations called it 608. I think what's fascinating is its bit rate is 480 bits per second per line, 32 characters per line in the closed captioning space, and it can support up to four captions. Way back in the Atlanta Olympics, I was working for Atlanta Olympic Broadcasting down there, the host broadcaster in Atlanta, obviously. They wanted to do a test to see how much. There was an analog network of content riding over the Bell South OC48 sonnet ring across all the venues, and they wanted to embed some empty time code in that vertical blanking line 21. And so we did some neat experiments to find what. How much could we compress that before we lost that signal? And that was kind of a neat way to get time code across all the venues, is to use that VBI line in an analog signal as data, but not for captioning, but in that case, time code. Little things you can do. The newer DTV standard, though, that's 708. It's interesting, by the way, the earlier speaker talking about ATS3, I have not studied that for incorporation of closed captioning or captioning at all, so I think that's probably got some other interesting developments coming up for that. Being a very robust specification, there's a lot of opportunity in it beyond just the standard closed captions. Like I said, broader character sets, fonts, colors, foreground and background colors. Required to be supported on TVs 13 inch or larger. So small TVs don't have to support the captioning, embedded captioning. I always check with the FCC, but that's what I last read. A little piece of insight here: if you notice, if you have like a streaming box, like an Apple TV or a Roku or something, to have captions on your television, you can't use the caption remote from your TV. You have to use the caption mode control from the OTT box, right? That's because HDMI does not pass through closed captioning data. So the actual receiving and the decoding of the captions are done on that set-top box or that OTT box, not the television itself. Now if the TV itself can decode these internet streams, and then you can have the decoding built in. Any questions at this point about the history? No? Okay. Now we're going to kind of talk about captionings and how you create them and the different options for that. I've tried to kind of break this down and do a matrix of three and then a subset of two for each of the three. We're going to talk about humans versus automation, live real time, which you can use those words interactively, or offline or file based, same thing. And then cloud versus on-premises. Some of these comparisons and contrasts will be obvious, some not so much. This is where I have to put my glasses on. I gotta read this. Hold on. Ah, there we go. Okay, right, so humans, definitely the traditional way to do it. Like with technology, with computers, they can pre-save names, like athlete names, stuff like that. So they don't have to necessarily type it in all the way, especially if it's some unique spellings, like a roster of 25 players and so, or that's quicker to create these little buttons that they, key combinations they can jump to when they hear their names mentioned. A human has a really good ability to listen to one voice through other voices. Technology doesn't have that at the current point, not quite as much. Also, same with background noise. It's amazing how good the human is at discerning human voice, be with jackhammers and cars going by. Again, technology, not quite as much yet. Interesting thing that occurred to me only last week is that a human, if you're hearing two people talk and you can understand what they're both saying and you're trying to transcribe, you can only transcribe one at a time, whose voice, if they're arguing, yeah, political season, right? They're always interrupting each other. Who do you transcribe? That could almost, not by intent necessarily, but a captioner could have a bias towards one person's dialogue and type more of what they hear than the other if they're on top of each other. The technology may not quite have that that bias. Of course, the technology may be challenged to hear the one voice all the way through anyway. The benefits of a human, also tried and true. It works. The national networks for live content still generally use humans. So the challenges, humans are most expensive. They make typos. With the automated systems, they do not. Their lexicon is their dictionary, and that's hard-coded in there. So if the word doesn't already exist, it won't send it out. Humans also have limited shifts. It's really strenuous for their typing. Something like 30 or 60 minutes, something like that might be a recommended shift. I'm not actually sure, but I know they're quite short. You're certainly not going to get them to type all day or for a whole four-hour sports program. They need to shift and have breaks. So, and like I said earlier, there are not enough humans to do this. It's kind of like broadcast engineers. It's just hard to find. It's a black art. Advanced scheduling, of course, also needed with humans to make sure someone's sitting at that caption station, whether that's on premises or at their home captioning, their dining room table, what have you. And one thing that is kind of interesting is if you watch closed captions and you know it's a human. Sometimes because you listen to the audio and then you see what they type an essence of, not all the time, it depends on how fast the dialogue is coming, but they have a way of typing the essence of this, of what's being said, not word for word. And those who are hard of hearing are very vocal, saying we want to see the actual words. We want to choose ourselves what the meaning of those sentences are. So that's a challenge that some, human captioners might have for you, as a challenge that what they're typing isn't exactly what was being said. Now we're switching those to the automatic, computer-based recognition. The benefits, of course, are lower cost, especially the more you use it, the lower it gets in cost. Like I said, never a typo. It has a way of learning as well. With our technology and other companies out there, you can feed the list of names as a text file that it keeps in memory as it looks to caption a program. Like, for instance, we can synchronize with the newsroom automation system, pull into teleprompter script for the half hour coming up. The technology throws out all the words it does know and keeps the ones it doesn't know to try to look for them and at them towards that list if it hears a word that it doesn't quite know. So a way to improve the accuracy. It won't be 100%, but that's a way to get it better. You don't need to schedule a computer in advance. It's ready to go unless somebody else is already using it. It can also run 24/7 nonstop, just chugs away. A challenge, like I said earlier, is concurrent speakers with automation because it doesn't know who to listen to. We're working on technology that can do better determination of who is talking in speaker change. We have some of that implemented now. Other companies, of course, are doing this too. As that gets better, it will be easier for the AI to understand a voice versus another voice. But we'll see where that goes. Of course, bad miking. I mean, here I am over here. Now, if I don't know, is this... Are these caption displays going to pick up what I'm saying now? Let's see. So to a point, off mic. But there's a point where the signal level is going to be ambient, and then it won't hear me at all. If you guys would give me a round of applause, it might drown it out as well. So, and again, the other types of noise in the background, people driving in a car or something like that. So noise and music. Music is the other thing, is that the AI does not always know what is a voice versus what is an instrument. And of course, with people singing in vocals, they can have long stretching out or shorter words that rhyme and don't always sound like the real world word. So other interesting challenges. But again, the science is evolving, and it's evolving pretty fast, and it's cool. And if I start talking about a slide and there's no slide, remind me, because this shows them all full screen, and here requires the tickle. Yeah, so about the ASR, again, it's science. Neural network based. We use a system in the background that rebuilds and comes out with cleaner quality results in our engine, and that results to when the software upgrades a couple, three times a year. We use a statistical language model. There are other grammar modules or models too that are out there. ASR can equally be used in real time or file based. And again, it can be a cloud system, a server array someplace on AWS or what have you. We've done things with that in testing. We actually did something. I think most of you know that these screens are being driven by a Raspberry Pi. The actual speech recognition is still running on a separate Windows appliance, but then the data is just fed to the Pi for display purposes. But a couple years ago, we actually built one running on a Pi. It itself didn't do the engine recognition. It had to go out to a cloud service. We moved our software out there, but then it was doing the processing and sending the data back. So that's kind of cool. And now with the new Pi, I don't know, it might even get fast enough to start doing it for real. So, by the way, this is a digression, but thank you to the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association for allowing us the opportunity to have these for the week. So we're thankful for that, to show these. Accuracy, it depends on these things we've talked about, quality of audio and such, but about 95% is what things are normally coming in at, give or take. So live and real time, right, there's about a 3 to 6 second delay in that. Partially that's because the system is trying to determine how many words it needs to fit in for 32 characters before doing a carriage return. So it wants to know how long that sentence is to maximize how many words it can get on one line before taking up another one. Of course, live is live, real captioning. You can fix the transcript later, but you can't fix it live when it goes out. That's the same with a human, really. Humans can also do offline captioning. They do that a lot. That's perhaps your most accurate captioning, is an offline file-based caption requirement where a human listens to it and captions it perfectly. I think that might still be what they mostly do in movies, where they really want to burn in the proper subtitles. That's the way to do it. More time-consuming, but you know, the human is still the best at it. Like with humans, automated systems can pre-save and then load special names and spellings and words. Offline is really kind of fun because it's fast. We come up with results in 2 to 3 times real time, so a 60-minute clip can take 20 or 30 minutes to caption. And there are more economical services that are actually cloud-based that will turn it back to you for in a day or two. If you're not in a hurry, you can save a lot of money using a cloud service. So there's niches out there for all kinds of different needs. The nice thing about doing it offline, too, is even if you use automated speech-to-text, your transcript is a document you can simply edit and fix. So if there's some typos in it, incorrect spelling, what have you, wrong words, you can fix it before you bind it with the video again. We'll briefly talk about that in a second. The cloud is getting really, really popular for placing things out in a server, but we recommend on-premises solutions when possible because it simplifies your topology completely and greatly, and you don't have to worry about network connectivity. It can just rest in your engineering room. Cloud versus on-premises, some of this will be somewhat redundant because of how we just talked about the first two slides. But a human generally at home can be listening. You could call a human cloud-based, right? They could be telephoned in via 3.4 kilohertz voice grade line, doing their captions on an ISDN circuit back or hearing the audio on that ISDN. There's a couple ways to do it. Some captioning services do it over internet connectivity back and forth. Of course, that connection can go down. The pizza delivery person can come to their door. What do? Do they keep captioning or get the pizza? Hopefully, they keep captioning. Potentially, they can also automate if it's cloud-based server solution, you can do a whole lot of batch files. And also, though, you can do that on premises. So The content does leave the building. We work with customers and DOD, FBI, that they have rooms where nothing leaves that room. So the captioning device sits there and nothing leaves it. It's everything stays in there. It's the Las Vegas solution, right? But what happens there stays there. The on-premises is generally simpler architecture. Again, on-premises facilities might cost more than cloud services. So it's some equilibrium you always look for, but no connection to lose. And your captioning products, are bolted in a rack, right? You could either scale them up for one file or one signal at a time, or add more and they'll do more in parallel. Much like cloud architecture, you can build that out in your offices as well. And on-premises means it's in your building. So this is kind of one example of a human. This is a typical human captioner captioning for a third-party caption service. They're at home with their stenographer device, maybe watching a live program over the air just like you are. That's one way to do it. Or they're just listening to the audio over a voice, you know, POTS line or ISDN line or internet. Then they are using their stenographer device to get that signal back to the captioning service, which then connects that back to the broadcast facility and embeds that in the satellite signal. So there is inherently a delay. If they're watching it as you're watching it, then that signal is being integrated back into the uplink signal. There's going to be a little delay. So this is kind of what you might see when you start to concatenate all these pieces together. It's a bit of a, you know, bit of a process, right? And there's some of that subject to change depending on the person. Again, they may not be watching the program. I suspect they might be better captioners when they can watch it, but not all captioners have television that can receive that signal of what's on the air in their own, you know, viewing area. So, and again, the web is being used more commonly, but still there's ISDN and POTS in use as well. This is a way you might see the architecture in an on-premises solution. So it's a little bit more direct. Take the voice of the commentator, throw it in a speech-to-text engine, take the captions, embed them in your video signal, and up the signal they go, up down your transmission chain and on the air. So there is another benefit of on-premises versus off-site. So why do you want to caption, right? There's a lot of neat reasons. Sadly, I'm halfway through. I'm going to have to speed this up. Of course, the FCC regulations. And I don't have a whole list of all the rules and regs to show you today. You can look those up. They're real exciting stuff. But the lawsuits is something I want to make more of an interesting point here, because more of that is happening, not per the FCC regulations necessarily as much as via the Americans with Disabilities Act. Captioning also makes your content searchable. We'll get to that. Improved customer experience. More people get to see your content and enjoy your content if it's got captions in it. Or if you are a venue and you are enabling captions to be seen on your content, same thing. Because really, it's not just creating content. Because a lot of you guys, you're already broadcasting the content. So it's either got captions or it doesn't. So if it does, try to get it out there and try to maybe even remind your viewers that you have it. A lot of people who don't really need captioning unless they're watching Downton Abbey don't know it's there. So and transcripts, of course, also is a great thing. So broadcasters need to care to allow it to pass through. Content creators need to do it to make their content more interesting and make it more captioned. I mean, my gosh, if you've got some advertisers with product placement in there and the talent on the show are talking about the can of Coke over there, if someone's watching but not hearing it, do they even know that Coke can is being talked about? That's actually not fair to the advertiser, but if it's in the captioning text, it'll still come out on the screen. Ah, there's a can of Coke over there. So, you know, advertisers themselves are aware that captions bring more knowledge of their own brand name. Venue owners, sports theaters, airports, restaurants, bars, systems integrators, it's part of the technology you're running through, especially like if you're doing video encoding for streaming. Does that encoding device pass through the captioning data to the CDN? For instance, we in the lab have been working with VBrick and Teradek, and some Teradek models do not pass caption data, and some do. So, and some, it's like the same box will do it, but just not the current version of firmware. You just have to upgrade, and all of a sudden, boom, there it is. So, lots of little things. So I'd say, who shouldn't care is really the bigger question. The ADA, There's another suit, and that is the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 prohibits discrimination on the basis of disability in programs conducted by federal agencies or those receiving federal financial assistance, which can be public television. If they receive federal monies, that may give a litigious person more opportunity to go after them than just the ADA. I've read of suits that were used both of these in tandem to sue against a broadcaster. I would recommend this one little website, by the way, as we keep going, NAD.org, National Association for the Deaf. They're really out there pushing agendas, and what they talk about isn't necessarily regulation, but it can be or will be one day, so best to do the homework in your spare time, right? More local governments are getting involved, too, municipalities and such. I've got a couple of those things coming up. One thing, the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, doesn't regulate, therefore, home videos, DVDs, or video games, which is an interesting little side area. So there's exemptions around there, and I don't know, like when you're in, on your, you know, whether you're over the air, whether you're in cable, whether it's a streaming offering that you have, it's safer to caption everything, and it's just better. I won't read all the details of the slide, but this is from the FCC, and one of the things that they're mandating of and have been is the quality, the accuracy of it, that it's, the captions are synchronous to the content, that they are complete for the whole duration of the program, and that they're placed properly and not such a way to block out the content of the screen itself. So those are some of the things that they're kind of out there trying to regulate. A little bit about the lawsuits. The National Association for the Deaf, they would like to see all content, live and recorded, 24/7, captioned. Access to emergency broadcasts, including whether captioned, but real-time technology and services also, or humans. Display of closed captioning at all times on TVs and public places, at all times, in all places. So that's, I get their point. That's an expensive thing to do. But there are lawsuits pushing to make that happen, and regulations in general. So just kind of imagine, that's kind of on the way. That's coming. It's if not in your particular area, it can be around the corner. Let's see here. Whoop. Okay, great. Okay, so the... this one was a couple years ago that Harvard got sued for lack of closed captioning content on the videos, MIT as well, on their websites. And they're in the educational community. They're supposed to be out there as leaders for this, but that doesn't mean that they can get it all done, and the budgets are there for everything. And we're talking to several universities about captioning their content, and some of them have temporarily taken down their content from the public because they're not captioned and because they're worried about lawsuits. So that's sad to do that, because that means your content that you want to be available to your community is not out there right now. NPR got sued. This I think was 2 years ago. And this is a bit of a broader act about making your website accessible to different apps that are allowed, or mobile devices that make websites accessible for the hearing, or I'm sorry, for the yes, for the hearing impaired, but also for the visually impaired. So I left it in here because it's not directly about closed captioning, but it's related to more accessibility, and that it's becoming a thing. It has been. Netflix, they are now making all their content captioned, I believe, now because of this suit. This was a few years back, and they, they've got a whole lot of video content out there. So. This is interesting. This gentleman, Philip Sullivan, New York City, he sued more than 100 companies under the Americans with Disabilities Act for captioned or lack of captions in different content platforms and networks. So you don't want to get a letter from this guy. He's got it down to a system, and so something to be aware of. That he's a serial litigant. Definitely a pain, but also, we all must know someone who is hearing impaired. I have a cousin whose daughter, so my niece, went to Gallaudet University, and she's got a thriving business in film, in the production, and she manages to get past this challenge, and it's amazing. But I digress. There we go. This one, I just noticed this one by sitting at a bar. I keep thinking I should deduct the beer that I had when I learned this. But in Ann Arbor, where I live, there is one of the patrons were telling me, or the bartender, that the I was there watching a football game. I hope it wasn't the Badgers game, but it might have been. And the any television that is on in a public place in Ann Arbor now has to have its captions on. And they're far from the only one. There's a couple more coming right up here. And I don't know if there's a size limit to that screen, like if it's 13-inch or something. I think it's any television that's turned on has to have captions on. Now, if the content's not captioned, then you can't do anything about it. Too fast. Yep, and so in Seattle, excuse me, is doing what Portland and San Francisco has already done, and that is requiring, again, captions in TVs, bars, and restaurants, and stadiums, which makes it even more interesting. And I know I've talked to more people who have gone to stadiums and are seeing more captions that are up there, the PA announcer, full-time. So some of that may be because their jurisdiction, their town requires it. Some of it are doing it because they want to, you know, there's that smiley face. It's good for the patrons. And of course, in a sports bar, if you're watching five or six games on all these TVs, only one game's going to be on. You really kind of want those captions on just to see what you're missing. Okay, cool. Now, another thing is when you're embedding captions into your content, and I'm not really talking about open captions because that's not really, you don't want to, ideally you want to embed it so it's not part of your video, the actual video signal portion. Google's YouTube has been scraping that stuff for a long time and growing into their search results actual parts and phrases and words in video clips. So if you search through Google, you'll find out more and more videos are showing up based on the captions that's in the embedded signal. Also interesting, Google for a few years ago was caught, and I don't know if caught really is the right word, I mean, they were discovered that they were also skimming or scanning all the imaging along the video clips durations for OCR content and harvesting the text that are on the screens. So that I suppose that takes probably a little more horsepower than it does to just index a transcript, but so they're very interested in making their content searchable. And there you go. If you've got product and brand names in your closed captions, your video content may become higher in a Google search list because your content has captions in it that are showing up. The last thing is related to this is in logging and compliance applications. If you have software that your company uses, your broadcast network uses to monitor your station or other stations, we're familiar with product that actually has the ability to record the captions as well and keep it as separate database files. So literally with the thing that I'm thinking about is you go in and you select what channels that you've been recording that you want to search across, and you just type in the word that you're looking for, like General Motors or something, if you're looking for the news on a car or the strike or what have you. And then it will come with a full list of all the channels and all the time day parts and times of day and where that word General Motors appeared. So that's a really cool way to find your text. If a listener or a viewer calls in and says they have a problem or want to know more about something that was said on the air, you can search for that right away if your login compliance system has captioning built into it and see exactly where that was and watch and listen to it yourself. Again, that's what captioned content can do. So pretty cool. Only 200 more slides. I forgot the other ones. But anyway. And so, yeah, we talked about a little bit like an improved customer experience with captions, bars, restaurants, noisy places. Certainly, digital signage is more and more. We're working with a customer now that has several different factories that has digital signage in along their production facilities and in cafeterias and stuff like that and hallways. And they don't want that audio blaring all the time in those walkplace areas. So they want captions on this content so that the workers who walk by will see what's being talked about. And especially if it's in a big factory where they make cars or something. I mean, it's too noisy. But if you have captions, you can see what's being talked about much easier. Captions catch your attention, right? If you walk by a display in a window at a retail shop and you just see the video going by, maybe that's not interesting, but if a couple people talking enters the captions, you might stop and look at it and realize, therefore, your viewers are looking at things like that too. So anyway, like we've talked about it, a cacophony of television signals in a sports bar type of environment or restaurants, it's nice to have. Digital signage, you walk by airports, it's hard to fly now without seeing a TV that's on in an airport, and probably its captions are on as well. So And the same with, on, like I said, factory floors, libraries. I have not yet personally seen televisions on in a library with captions, but I'm sure they're there. This is, how would you like to have this video screen in your house? Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. It's a 63,000 square foot, 360 degree wraparound TV, right? The entire upper ring is a full 360 degree, and it has a built-in laser filter too, so you can't point at it with a laser. Oh, okay. Well, anyway, there you go. Yeah. So that's that. That's a bit of an exception, but this is kind of an example of like esports and more events going on with even more televisions and monitors around. And so if there's PA announcers, you got places to put these captions. That venue at Mercedes-Benz has 2,000 TVs around the concourse. The question then is, what do you caption? What do you put there? Is it content related to each screen? If it's just an advertisement without audio, without voice or dialogue, maybe they can just roll through some announcements and stuff like that. And that's more of an IT thing, because then if you're using it for digital signage, then you have to have a system designed to create captions for video that may not be related to that video. That's different than broadcast for sure, but that's something else to think about. And then live translations. A few companies like us are playing with doing live translations where you put one language into the engine and out pops a whole other language. That's like the Star Trek Universal Translator kind of thing. And so that's kind of a neat thing. If you start captioning your content, you can instantly do translations of it live on the fly as well. So people are talking, maybe a panelist, to three or four different languages. And each one can speak in their own language. You can caption each one of them and put a translation on a video screen behind them of what they're saying in the language, you'd have to determine what's the dominant language in the room. That gets interesting. Or just translate from one to each other's languages all the time. That'd be kind of fun. This is only here for one reason. I thought it was funny. As I was Googling for images, I saw this patch bay, and I thought, oh, all these flags, great. And then I realized that's an 1/8-inch tip ring sleeve jack trying to be plugged into an RCA patch bay. And I thought, okay, I got to show the people this one. This is the funny one. So that probably belongs in the earliest presentation here, right, about all the mishaps and things that are done goofy wrong. Well, that's one of those. So I think the signal won't get through on that one. Here's an example. We talked about transcripts, the different file types that you can create when you caption. Our technology and other companies also do these transcripts. They're often used, originally they were created really to feed editing applications, Final Cut Pro, DaVinci, Premiere. These video applications are designed to take text files that are indexed by time and manually or automatically merge it with the video signal, and then you export that video out, and then you have a captioned video that you did in offline mode that you captioned offline. So that's a real common way to do it. These transcripts kind of look like this. This is from here yesterday morning. And the timestamps, well, my computer set on East Coast time, so might be off there. I can't quite see what it says here. That's a standard text file. There's other formats that are out there, like SMI, SCC, I think, VTT. There's a couple of EBU, XML type of files. And you can see that these are indexed. These are simple little text files. These index points tell the video editor editing application when this dialogue was said. And that's it, just one line. And it just, you know, is like that for quite a long document. And by the way, as Linda already knows, all of the transcripts from all of the captions that we've been doing this week will be sent to her. So she'll have full transcripts of everything in text, which then can be added to a searchable database that you guys may have of the proceedings. So this gets more interesting. This is, I cannot quite see the file type up here. SMI, okay. And that's a little, looks like a little more of a formatted, like, thank you. Different applications want to read different things. This one's my favorite, hexadecimal. I have no idea what this one says, but you can make up your mind. Actually, some of you probably can read hex, so any translators out there? That's kind of a nice part about transcripts. Some transcripts might need some editing, so especially if you do stuff for like government work, you might need to do this to it. So, right. Any Sharpies out there? That was a big Sharpie, too. That's big, big, bold blocks of text. A couple little things here related to what we're talking about with captioning, the technology and how you do it. Things that we're not really touching on tonight, but or today, but you should be aware of. CART, Communication Access Real-Time Translation. That's actually, technically, that's what we're doing here in this room with these displays. Automated, although it can be a human, creating text on a local display only. Not for a video, not for a broadcast. Although, if we were webcasting, this data would be very easy to integrate into a live stream. So it starts to gray between how you do things. Secondary audio programming, it's an older term used with NTSC videos. Audio description, video description services are very very helpful for those who also are a bit challenged with sight. And in fact, they may have perfectly good hearing, but maybe not so much good eyesight. My dad with macular degeneration has trouble seeing what's on the screen. If the content had descriptive audio, he might be able to enjoy a little better. The problem with is descriptive audio is you're hearing the show in the dialogue and this descriptive audio at the same time. It's very confusing. So, and of course, subtitles, we're used to different languages in DVDs and stuff like that. In the future, it's going to get more very interesting. With all this text, naturally, there's people wanting to write software to data mine it, understand the sentiment of what somebody is meaning, both emotion and by word, topic and entity recognition, readability assessment. I don't even know what that means. Once you have all this text, you can do powerful things with it. The last thing, I think, which is very interesting, is that I read this in Wired. There's a company out of MIT that created a spin-out called Cogito, and it's an AI-based speech analysis application that does behavioral science, applies the behavioral science to telephone calls. And call operators at call centers will see these little logos to tell them what the mood is of the caller, which is interesting, and also how to counter-react that. If you got a grumpy caller, give them a smile face to make you, as a person on the phone, start to smile and try to make them happier. The Pentagon's using this for medical, you know, for healthcare, the VA, financial markets, financial companies. So, yeah, that's, you know, you call a call center now and you're getting some of that. Depends on who. So, anyway, I am wrapped up. I hope that was an interesting jaunt through all of this. There's a lot more out there, but yes.
Hi. The ENCO captions were listed at 96 to 98% accuracy. When you're measuring that, what criteria are you measuring?
So we, yeah, 95 to 98% is our estimated accuracy. And we actually, we work with another company that does statistical analysis of, they actually look at the captions and the audio and then give back to us a data set of how accurate it was. So, I don't know if they do testing. I don't know if they challenge it with music or with background noise, because we say we really, you really shouldn't background, you should not caption with much background music or a lot of noise. So, you know, that's, I don't know if they've done testing with that part or not. But we actually use a third-party service to analyze it for accuracy. And I just saw a new spreadsheet last week, and that's where the 98 cop popped in, because we were looking mid-90s, and now it's 98. So at the top, so that's pretty neat.
One more question.
It's the acoustics in this room are so awfully terrible, it's hard to understand the intelligibility. So I've been watching the screen for 3 days, and a couple things that I've noticed, it has never accurately translated ATSC. It shows up in lots of different ways. And the most, oh, it did there. That's good. If I say it quickly, you probably can't. The other most next. Amusing translation is when people are talking about equipment racks.
Yeah.
It shows up as IRAQ. And I don't think that's the same as an equipment rack.
Interesting, right. It thinks as a nation name. Well, that's the funny part. A lot of words sound alike, and we understand in the stretching of all the words together. Yeah, you guys got to go to lunch. I could talk about this for hours. Is there any more questions? Okay, sorry. If you can catch me around here if you have any more. But thank you for your time. Sorry, I went a little over. But
Bill, thank you.